Thank you, John. And it is true, I'm as old as John. And we are both 45 years older than Kathleen. You know, I'm going to do what John did. You couldn't see from here, but John skipped about 15 pages of his speech because he and I come from a political background. We know that if you ask an audience, no matter who the speaker is or how collectively numbered speakers are, to stand more than 15 minutes, you lose them all. And you're beyond 15 minutes already. So, John, thank you for your passion and perseverance and the incredible energy you've shown in representing American interest around the world. I have been here for, I have to admit, 8 presidents, and I've never seen a man or woman with as much energy and commitment as you have shown, John, and we thank you for that. And to the members of the Diplomatic Corps, to Evan Ryan, who is the Assistant Secretary of Education and Cultural Affairs, one of the most talented people to occupy this office, in my view, to Roberta, who has been the source of my collective education here. I spent most of my career early on dealing with the Soviet Union and NATO and the Middle East. And when the President asked me, as Ben will tell you, to take a direct hand in increasing personal relationships and connections in the hemisphere, I immediately went to Roberta. Although I thought I knew a lot, I realized until I started talking to Roberta how little I knew. Thank you for the education, Roberta. And to cut right to it, there's a reason why this program is here. It's Ben Rhodes. Now, obviously, it's the President of the United States, but Ben has been the engine behind making this happen. He has been the idea, the intellectual gravamen behind it. And Ben, I want to personally thank you because I think not only will this be a legacy for the President of the United States, it will be one for you as well. So congratulations. You know, for the first time, and I apologize, Roberta, because she's heard me make this comment before. For the first time in the history of the hemisphere, you can look at the hemisphere and see the possibility of a democratic, middle-class, secure hemisphere from top to bottom that has never, ever existed in the history of the hemisphere. And this is a fairly propitious moment. With middle class in Latin America and the Caribbean that is 275 million strong, a region that's becoming and will be the epicenter of energy in the world, this will be the epicenter of energy production in the world. A hemisphere where we have an unbroken line of free trade agreements stretching from Canada to Chile and $1 trillion already, $1 trillion trade economy in North America alone. 40% of all of American exports go within this hemisphere, and that is destined to grow. I do not say this as a criticism of any other part of the world, but I believe the economic muscle and might of the 21st century will reside in the Western Hemisphere because of the incredible potential that exists here. And that's part of the reason why the President has John focus on this, has asked me to join John and Roberta to help deepen the engagement in the Western Hemisphere. But our ability to make good on these incredible opportunities and expand depends on our populations being, very simply, more connected. John has heard me say before, and the President kids me for saying it so often, I don't want to try to improve on Tip O'Neill's axiom that all politics is local, but I think I can. All politics is personal, and all foreign policy ultimately is personal in terms of the relationships leaders have, and that gets nurtured by the exposure of those future leaders to the culture, the language, and the politics of one another's country. The more exposed to each other's culture, the more fluent we are in each other's languages, the more knowledgeable about each other's economies and societies we are, that is the thing, in fact, which is going to build this incredible alliance in the hemisphere, this economic alliance in the hemisphere. And all rests, as John has pointed out, others have on education. In our country and the remainder of the hemisphere, there's a need for new skills training to sustain economic growth. There are 600,000 jobs in the United States of America, high-tech jobs that are going unanswered, unfilled because of the lack of skills that exist throughout the entire hemisphere. Right now, too many people are still, particularly those young people John referenced, are on the outside looking in. And the fact is that we face a global competition. And we have the workforce. We're going to need a workforce that throughout the hemisphere that is better educated and is more, how can I say it, informed and astute about one another's countries and cultures. Just as important for students in this hemisphere is to gain greater fluency in English. But it's equally important for young Americans to learn Spanish and Portuguese. Because when 40% of the exports, and still rising, exist and are here in this hemisphere, a lot of our economic future will be conducted in the language of the Americas. That's why President Obama, among other reasons, launched 100,000 Strong, 100,000 students going to Latin America and the Caribbean by the year 2020, and 100,000 students in the hemisphere coming here. This is the stuff of which close ties are made, the stuff of which economic growth is cemented. And by the way, international students add, just students coming here, international students, add $24 billion a year to the U.S. economy. And American students going south will add billions of dollars to the economy of those countries as well. 100,000 Strong isn't just another U.S. government scholarship program. We already have major and successful international scholarship programs like Fulbright, Access Grants, and others. What we're trying to do here is create something more, as Ben said, something more than a government program. We're trying to create a synergy, a new synergy between private sectors, charities, universities, and all the governments in the hemisphere to invest in sending students to and from the United States, to lower the financial and logistical and language and informational barriers that now stand in the way. Countries in the region recognize, I believe, the importance of this. And all the leaders I've been, and poor Roberta has been on all my recent many trips to it within the hemisphere, I'm convinced that that they absolutely understand, as all the speakers have said, the consequence of this. The governments across Latin America have tripled their investment in the Fulbright program over the past decade. Brazil has launched a massive program to send young people overseas to study science, technology, engineering, and math. And we recognize it, too. The U.S. government is announcing new grants and programs to connect international students to American universities, offering scholarships to learn English to people in disadvantaged communities, engaging in dialogue and international education like the one I was able to launch in Mexico City, which Assistant Secretary Ryan has just attended. And but as much as is going on, there's need to do more. Right now, out of the 300,000 U.S. students learning abroad, just 45,000 of them are in this hemisphere. We need to more than double that. We need to more than double that. Nearly 67,000 Latin American and Caribbean students are in U.S. colleges right now, and that's really good. But South Korea alone has 70,000. South Korea alone has 70,000 South Korean students in American universities right now. That's good. I'm not suggesting that should let up at all. But it's the means by which you can make some comparisons here about how far we have to move and what potential there is when we do move. We all need to pull our weight here, and the partnership is of equal benefit to the United States and to the rest of the hemisphere. If we can deliver the effort and investment required, each of our countries is going to see real, tangible improvements in people's lives. And again, John mentioned it, ExxonMobil, Santander Bank, which I understand didn't know how to tell Kathleen Kennedy Townsend no. Coca-Cola, where my niece is here. I'm sure the only reason is Coke is doing this, Missy, is because of you. Thank you very much. That's a joke, by the way. Although I'm confident Missy, who worked at the state, knows this. Anyway, the list goes on. But I just want to thank you all because I think you all get it. It also significantly impacts and will impact on your businesses and opportunities and access. You know, on our way to Mexico City, Evan Ryan asked a very simple question on Twitter. She said, how will you invest in the future? That's basically the question that we're all asking right now. We think we have the answer. Because if we invest in the future, there's going to be no limit to the possibilities that are available to us in this hemisphere. I'm convinced that the greatest opportunity, economically and politically, in the next 25 years exists in this hemisphere. Think of what we're doing on TPP. It's not just about our relationships in the Pacific Basin. It's about Latin American Pacific nations being part of this. It's about expanding, I believe, not just arithmetically, but geometrically over time, the opportunities that exist. And that brings stability. That brings economic growth, brings stability. There's no reason we can't, as I said, be the epicenter not only of energy here, but the epicenter of ideas and technology and breakthroughs over the next 25 years. But we have to invest in our young. We have to feed their minds. We have to give them real opportunity in order to see the world and take part in it. You know, the single greatest gift I think we'd all acknowledge, and you're all sophisticated people gathered in this room, and those of you who are in public service, ambassadors and members of governments of other countries, it's obviously not the economic opportunity you provide your children. The great advantage they get is they get exposure. They get exposure. When you think about it, what's the one thing you can give your child that is most likely to impact upon that child's stability, future, and well-being? It's exposure. It's exposure. I remember my son working overseas calling me. I will not tell you what company he's working with. He said, "Dad, these guys aren't that smart. I can do this." It was an American company he's working for. He said, "They're good, but I can do this." Think of all of your personal experiences. What made you think, if you didn't come from a position of privilege to begin with, what made you think you could do what you're doing? You saw other people doing the same thing you're now doing and said, "I can do that. I can do that." That's what this is all about. That's what this is, at the bottom line, what it's all about. You know, William Butler Yeats said, "Education is not filling a pail. It's lighting a fire." I've been doing this a long, long time. I have, just since I've been in this job, I've traveled over 900,000 miles. I've traveled millions of miles and met every major world leader in the last 40 years, just because of my position, not because of any consequence. And every single solitary time, those who understand most are those who've been exposed, as John said. How many times, John, do we run into people, like you said, who've been educated in America, or American leaders and American business people who've been exposed and educated abroad? That's the stuff of which real progress is made. And we have an overwhelming opportunity to light that spark on a continent and a hemisphere that is just ready. It is just absolutely ready. And so, folks, thank you for your cooperation. I thank all my colleagues here for their leadership. And again, I particularly want to thank Ben Rhodes for not letting this slide away from the beginning. Thank you all so very much.